Beacon Press Audio presents Soul Culture, Black Poets, Books, and Questions That Grew Me Up by Ramika Bingham Risher. This audiobook is narrated by Rolene Delva. Published by Beacon Press Audio, 2022. Introduction. Finding room for myself in any space as a child was a necessary defiant tending. To care for myself, to prove to myself that I wasn't invisible, despite what the world told me. Being a little black girl in America meant being barely evident in most spaces. Incidental. Inconsequential. But in my household, in my intimate communities, in the black family at large, a cultural institution cobbled together by years of shared experience, I learned early on, through reading, that invisibility and fear were just another arm of God to pass through. As I was growing up, most of my questions about identity and survival were turned over and over again in good books, and especially in poems by those whose work I loved. In my old copy of the Afrobets, Book of Black Heroes from A to Z, I found above the entry on Wheatley Phyllis, scribbled in my third grade handwriting, questions like, were books by black people allowed, looked down upon, banned? If it was illegal for us to read or write, how did we prove what we knew? As a lifelong reader, as someone devoted to and wholly invested in the power of the word, examining the lives and work of writers always made it easier to examine my own. I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, mostly a long distance from branches of extended family up and down the East Coast. To show their love and sacrifice, and to ease the distance, relatives put together boxes of desired things: school clothes, shoes with bows or fresh labels, Buttercrunch cookies from the corner store, gold nameplate necklaces, grown-up perfume, and more. Once, when asked what I wanted folks to send me, I said, books about black people, because I found so few at the library. That seemed to please them more than any other request. I guess when Solomon asked for wisdom, Jehovah was so relieved he had an axe to fatten his pockets, like some other cousins did, that God gave in abundance. From then on, books by Virginia Hamilton, Walter Dean Myers, and others arrived with each box. But even after I won a district poetry contest in the fifth grade, it took many years and books sent cross-country, stumbled upon in libraries and thrift stores, or put into my hands by teachers who saw some yearning in me before I understood that black poets weren't an anomaly. They were plentiful. They had singular voices and lineages, and their journeys were as varied as America itself. Soul culture is a phrase meant to evoke the nuanced living of black Americans, and particularly contemporary black American poets. It is black devotion, black reclamation and reframing of the past, black bantering and signifying, black family structures and supports, black joy, liberation, and a radical love ethic despite black trauma, fear, and rootlessness. If there's anything black people know, it's that we can be erased from history. This project was meant to be part oral history, part coming of age on the shoulders of giants. My goal was to ask black writers whose work changed me, how do you make a life as a poet? Then ask and answer for myself, what questions and crafting might help you make a life as a poet in their wake? Black books and black writers showed me there was a way for me to exist in the world of words, and hence, a way for me to exist in the world. My interest in this project was centering black voices and exploring the interiority of the creative lives of poets. I wanted to provide a fuller picture for those engaging in scholarship about the black literary tradition, not only of those interviewed here, but also of the many listed therein as part of the poet's trajectories, to record and decode cultural information shared in these narratives. So, over more than a decade, I interviewed 10 poets whose work I loved. Sonia Sanchez, Lucille Clifton, E. Ethelbert Miller, Tim Siebels, Patricia Smith, Erica Hunt, Forrest Hamer, Natasha Trethewey, Honoré Fanon Jeffers, and A. Van Jordan. My approach to each interview was much the same, though I came to the subjects at different times and in various ways. I conducted the interviews at each author's convenience and traveled to locations most comfortable for them. Each began with a query, wherein I explained the interview as an in-depth look at the breadth of the author's work, focusing on craft, process, and the writing life, as well as biographical information and major influences. The general crux of my questions followed as such. How did your home life and reading life shape you? Who were your influences and comrades, your cultivated community? How do you craft what you bring into the world? How do you make a life as a poet? I was interviewing poets who'd made their way between waves of Black art histories. The Harlem Renaissance saw a confluence of artists in the 1920s and 30s. Then the Black arts movement saw another concentrated burst of brilliance from the 1960s until around 1975. I am certain now, as hindsight is 2020, that Cave Canem began the next communal movement in Black poetry in 1996. Cave Canem, founded by poets Toy Derricotte and Cornelius Eady, was a Black poets' writing retreat and organization designed to help remedy the underrepresentation and isolation of African American poets in MFA programs and writing workshops. Cave Canem is a home for the many voices of African American poetry. As most poets brought up in their interviews, before this time, they worked without mass community, often in solitude or as the only in almost every room they managed to enter. But Cave Canem, like those other art movements, began to shift that reality. Without two important entities, E. Ethelbert Miller and Cave Canem, this book would never have come to be. My reason for starting the project was simple. I had endless questions for the writers I loved, and I drove Miller, the first teacher with whom I studied in graduate school, up a wall asking about them. He wrote me a letter, said I had to get over this awe syndrome I had about other writers, and suggested I start conducting interviews to get some of those questions answered definitively, to assure myself that other Black writers weren't so different from me. Long before hashtag Black Girl Magic was trending, magical was a term I once used to describe a writer I loved, and Miller implied that this outlook could be dangerous too. Who can become magical? How can one chart a path to magical? He asked. Though I generally recount Langston Hughes as the impetus for my love of poetry, the insatiable kernel, the spark, came just after finding Hughes, when I stumbled upon a whole book of poems, Honey, I Love, by Eloise Greenfield, at my favorite library. There was a dark brown girl on the cover of the book, with hair in a haloed afro like mine after wash day and before the hot comb press, and it opened up another part of me. Until then, my notebooks had been filled with short stories and diary entries, but now I looked for poems everywhere and scribbled my own musings. I remember being entranced by a poem that was an ars poetica of sorts, a blues that ended on an uncharacteristically hopeful refrain. Greenfield's poem, Things, was about what we can save and what goes. The little girl in the poem speaks first of what's transient, then of what she can hold on to, a poem. A made thing, a memory transcribed and beautified, a gift. The last lines of the poem make the reader snap to attention by shifting the cadence and tone. But beyond this, they posit that one could create something more valuable and lasting than the things you can find.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?